Tired of ads interfering with your favorite sports podcasts? Good news. Ad-free listening is available on Amazon Music for all the music plus top podcasts included with your Prime membership. Stay ahead of the game by downloading the Amazon Music app for free or go to amazon.com/sportsadfree. That's amazon.com/sportsadfree to catch up on the latest episodes without the ads.
Off Air, the podcast. With Jane Garvey and Fee Glover.
I go to the sink and I have some cheese.
Keep your cheese in the sink.
Doesn't everybody?
Every Monday to Thursday, Jane and Fee keep the microphones on after their Times radio show.
I think if we were to do a Mr. and Mrs.
Oh, no.
Yes. How would that go in the booth?
Badly. It would go very badly.
Unencumbered and off air.
Two tiny women with gobs.
Off Air, the podcast. Now available on the Times radio app.
Who was that?
Our man from the countryside, I think.
Plenty of room for donkey jokes in there as well. We'll explain the horse reference in a minute. Hello and welcome to the latest edition of The Ruck, the new rugby podcast from The Times and The Sunday Times. I'm Owen Slott, Chief Rugby Correspondent of The Times, and I'm your podcast governor for the week. In search of truth and understanding in the proud, perplexing, elegant, entangled world of rugby, this week we have gone to greater lengths than ever. We have found that there is life outside of the Six Nations. We've been to Offenbach in Germany. We've been watching the horses run and refining our true understanding of a thoroughbred rugby player. We even have a link to our studio in Scotland. This podcast is finally complete now that we have Mark Palmer, the Scottish rugby correspondent of the Sunday Times, hooked up from our Edinburgh studio. Welcome, Mark.
Thank you. Good morning.
What does the studio look like?
Very grey, I'd have to say.
It's your front room, isn't it?
No, it is actually the office, so they've seen me for the first time this year.
Fantastic. I hope you're getting on with them well.
Indeed.
Our other guest today, straight out of his jodhpurs and armed with tips for Cheltenham, an age-old rugby writer who switched to the GGs last year when he found two horse races too easy to call. Mark Suster, welcome. How many years did you write rugby for the Times?
22, I think. I'm slightly overweight now, that's why I had to go to the horses because they found an old Dobbin which could carry me.
Well, I think you're looking fantastic. Welcome to the podcast.
Thanks for
what you said earlier. Okay.
And of course, we have our regular this week, Stephen Jones, rugby correspondent at the Sunday Times. Jonesy, you thought you'd covered every blade of international rugby until you were sent last weekend to cover Belgium against Germany. Germany against Belgium in Offenbach, that is. Jonesy, in a perfect world, and you're in charge of the Sunday Times expenses, where would you go next?
The place I've never been, I've always wanted to cover rugby, is Samoa. It may not be the most luxurious 10-star existence out there, Owen, but I've always wanted to go there because it's a heartbeat of rugby. But actually, so was Germany. It's just amazing that rugby people are very, very much the same the world over. They all go along with families and they just react like everybody reacts. I think Samoa, I would love it to be my next stop, and I'll be seeing the powers that be and accountants to see if I can go tomorrow.
Okay. In our fantasy world of expenses, my trip is to the Las Vegas Sevens next year, which was over the weekend. Just a trip that I think one has to do at some stage. Mark, what about yourself?
Well, for me, and I think probably quite pertinent given the whole discussion about whether the Six Nations should be expanded, I would love to go to Tbilisi and see Georgia play Russia.
Yeah.
60,000-70,000 people. It's bonkers. Georgia, we've seen articles about people ready to put 10, 20 million into it, and I think there'll be a fantastic addition as and when the Six Nations decides whether they should expand. So that would be my on my wish list, my bucket list.
Good one. Nice one.
And Mark?
A slightly more interesting, an interesting one for me anyway, the Bahamas. Now, I
interviewed
a
chap.
Yeah, George Hunter, who was a jobbing tight head for Ayr and Glasgow Warriors briefly, last year discovered that he had eligibility to play for the Bahamas and went and made his debut last year against Mexico in the South, 35 degrees at kickoff, and had a great couple of weeks there when otherwise we'd have been in the freezing cold winter. So I think I would like to track his next game if possible, Steve. It was an interesting story. that his granddad had actually gone out there to launch the Bank of England in the Bahamas, had to come back to Britain during the Second World War, and of three boats that left the capital, only one made it back with him on it, and that's how George got his ever so strong link to the Bahamas.
Okay, I'm going to the Bahamas with you. I understand the managing editor does download this podcast, so we should all be off a great trip.
Planted
in the
seed.
We'll be off somewhere, but it might not be the Bahamas.
Yeah. Kinsale Sevens, our favourite.
That's another Kinsale Seven and the Bournemouth Sevens.
I've got my caravan pass
already.
Yeah,
I always go in a tent to that one.
Yeah.
We've got the fourth round of the Six Nations coming out this weekend. This has been a... Most of us in the game at the moment are enjoying the Six Nations, I think, as much as ever. There's a certain smugness around that we think we've got something really, really good this time round. So Seuss, you are now a racing correspondent. You last covered the Six Nations as a journalist 3 years ago. Mm-hmm. I just wonder, from the safe distance that you are, with your crop and your riding hat, and you're looking on,
and my form book.
You're looking on from the gallops. Do you think we're right to be feeling as happy about the Six Nations Championship this year as we are?
Yes, I genuinely do, because I'm utterly delighted, having worked up there and covered Scottish rugby for 4 years in the mid 90s, to see them their resurgence. Vern Cotter is an outstanding individual, obviously, and they've been putting the foundations in place over the last 3 or 4 years. The talent is coming through, and they're not just a team that relied on its traditional old sort of fast rucking game and great loose forwards. It now has a back division and an attacking division, which is at the match of any other nation. Wales, their demise, I think, or their slight downward trajectory is not something I'm surprised about. I think they've been far too predictable. England, we know about in terms of what's quite interesting is the reaction of England to when they were slightly in adversity in that first half against Italy. And it's interesting to see Eddie's reaction to that, which was probably slightly out of character, and I think he used that to deflect from the shortcomings in terms of England, how long they took to react to that. France, they promised a lot in the first game and are tailing off, but there's still the excitement. And Ireland, of course, which they've got a whole good crop of youngsters coming through, so it is exciting, and I think it's reignited and re-engaged the public.
Totally agree with that, Mark. I don't know what Mark Palmer thinks, but I've never experienced so many people who don't know anything about rugby or don't follow the game, you know, saying, "Oh, it's a Six Nations weekend," knowing it is, and saying, "Oh, you'll be busy. It's that rugby and all that." It's been terrific. I think it was foreseeable because no longer are the top three nations in the world all in the Southern Hemisphere. Now, arguably, two of the top three are in the Northern Hemisphere, which is tremendous. So it's been good. I think it's been attractive. Attendances have been fantastic. There's been stories of which Italy created one of their own, I thought, quite brilliantly. And I loved it. Loved it.
I think one of the things we need to be careful about is the suggestion is that to accommodate a global season that suits, that the Six Nations somehow has to be condensed from a 7-week thing, which is perfect now, I think. It allows people to recover. It allows teams to who haven't perhaps got the strength in depth to actually deal with any sort of serious injuries. And I think we've really got to be careful that international rugby is the watchword of the game. It is the engine that drives the game. And anything that compromises that, I think, World Rugby has to really take a look at.
I think compromise is the right word, because that's what will happen. People want it to go down to 5 straight weeks. They won't do that. They'll find something in the middle. It'll be 6.
Well,
I'm absolutely convinced that will happen.
Well,
2020 Six Nations six weeks championship.
What, three? Yeah,
three, and then a break, and then three more.
Yeah, just ridiculous. You're killing the goose that lays the golden egg. I think there are 2 million internationals, but the Six Nations is not excessive, and I actually think it was better when it was stretched out even further. So I think this is the absolute least time you can hold it over that they're doing it this year. Absolutely. Otherwise, but you get to game 3 or 4, you'd be on your backside.
Yeah, exactly, and think. World Rugby are duty bound to take that on board, and I think Bill and Augustine now, who run it, do understand the importance of that.
Good.
Saturday, the big game clearly is England against Scotland, the resurgent Scots. Mark, from where you're sitting in your Edinburgh studio, as we like to call it, to what extent are you buying in to this idea of that Scotland have turned around, that the good days are ahead?
I think there's certainly a lot more substantial evidence than there was maybe 6 or 7 months ago. As other Mark was saying there, there was a feeling that something was building over that World Cup period. Even the Six Nations 2 years ago when they were whitewashed, there were some narrow defeats in there and a sense that there was an edge emerging, and also some very talented players under the tutelage of Erm Cotter. I think that November series just there probably was the tipping point when they won that game against Argentina, not playing well, but found a way to win it rather than lose it, which is the customary pattern with Scotland. And then to go and beat Ireland took that on a step further. But I think the Welsh win was probably the most important of the lot in that they backed it up in a way that they haven't done, certainly against Wales, for a decade. But, you know, to have two home wins like that back-to-back really did feel like a bit of tangible proof that it's gone in the direction we all thought it was. I have to say, going to Twickenham, I'd be a lot more happy if Greg Laidlaw was there as well as Willem Nel and Alistair Dickinson, but you can't have it all.
I don't think you can overemphasise the importance of Scotland beating Ireland when Ireland were coming back and looked like they were going to win. Scotland of old would have lost that game. I think mentally that has been a huge sea change for them, and I think they'll only kick on and get better, and I think Vern Cotter should be the Lions coach.
The guy who typifies it for me is Finn Russell. Finn Russell is the greatest Scotland fly-half I've seen since John Rutherford, and John Rutherford is one of the greatest I've seen in any...
Gregor Townsend?
In any... Gregor was more...
Mercurial.
Gregor was a fantastic player as well, but not always...
Do you know what? Gregor Townsend is your Lions coach as well.
Well, he should be there as the attack coach, because I think, as we've seen, the paucity... Sorry, I'm distracting
you. Just come in from the race course. You completely redesigned the whole Lions tour.
Well, absolutely. No one's going to listen to me, though, but...
Of course we are. Anyway, as I said before, I was so rudely interrupted by Lester Piggott there. I think Finn Russell has got this unbelievable attitude to it. He goes out there, he expects to do well, he expects to win. Even if Scotland concede, he expects them to bounce back. And I just think that is the sort of attitude that they've lacked for so long. And I absolutely love him. And I just hope he holds it together at Twickenham, and it's very, very tight.
I have a theory that actually Scotland were better without Greg Laidlaw. You've almost said the opposite. But I think they have a more exciting scrum half who's got a better service and threatens more. I think they've got leadership in Barkley, and Finn Russell kicked his kicks the other day. Are they not better with that? Tell me I'm wrong.
Possibly. The very point that Steve has just made about Finn Russell is one of the reasons that I like having Greg Laidlaw there, and that he does kind of rein him in slightly. It is more kind of flamboyant excesses when he's starting to look at aeroplanes and whatnot flying past. He does kind of bring him back down to earth. However, having said that, Ali Price, I thought, stepped up very well against Wales, brought a different dimension. Will actually back himself. He saw some of his sniping breaks that were rivaling those of Reece Webb. And there was more tempo to the game there. And it also has forced Scotland to wean themselves off Greg in a way that was always going to have to happen, I think, ahead of the next World Cup when he'll be 33. John Bartley did step up in a leadership point of view. Both Greys did as well. Richie particularly is a real kick up the backside since Johnny started showing him up. And as you said, Finn Russell kicked his goals. So, you know, maybe sometimes when these things are forced upon you, it's the best way, because you just have to react.
My slight concern about Finn Russell, he's very much a confidence player, and I think England are going to really have a go at him on Saturday, and I think he can get lost if things don't go his way. He's a very good front foot player, and when Scotland are playing well, you see him to the fore, but I'm just concerned in an attritional battle whether he'll stand up to the mark.
Mark, I just wondered, do enough Scots, in your opinion, believe that they can win at Twickenham to enable them to win?
That's going to, I suppose, the proof will be in the pudding, but I genuinely think there is a belief in this team that hasn't been previous years. A lot of them went through the motions of saying that they did believe it, and I think this lot aren't bound by what's gone before. There's a quiet sort of confidence there. There's some real kind of guys who tread that line between confidence and arrogance pretty well, a bit of swagger like Stuart Hogg, Finn Russell, Ali Price himself, and they genuinely don't seem to be bound by any of the past failures. You saw that with that, you know, Ireland was the first opening day win in 11 years, hadn't beaten Wales for 10 years. They just kind of shrug these things off. There's a real kind of nice confidence to it now, which again is quite un-Scottish, but it's pleasing to see.
Mark, Seuss has already decided that Vern Cotter's going to be the Lions coach, which is an interesting shout.
Should have been.
it does seem extraordinary given the way the conversation's going that Vern Cotter's leaving. Was there never a way that Vern and Gregor Townsend could work together in tandem? Because surely that's the golden duo, isn't it?
I think so, and I think it basically came down to a straight choice between Gregor and Verne, and the SRU picked Gregor in that he's the homegrown coach. As you know, there hasn't exactly been a plethora of Scottish
coaches.
Yeah, I get
that, but what about both of them together?
Well, true, but I think it boiled down to Gregor saying that if he wasn't given that job at this point in time, he would probably have gone off and sought pastures new, which I would argue would probably actually have been a good thing for him at age 43, 44, whatever he is now, to go off and get another 4 years under his belt somewhere else, let Verne take the through to the next World Cup and finish the job that he's so patently started. But the SIU took a decision to back him over Verne. I'm not sure Verne was best pleased, as you can imagine, but seems to have got his head around it. And the fact that the team are performing so well and so for him, I think speaks volumes for how the fact that they acknowledge what he has done for him over the last 3 years. There's been certainly no suggestion of a drop off. Quite the opposite.
Mark, is it not yet another disaster from the Scott Johnson era? Though Scott Johnson has been fairly disastrous, in my opinion, whenever he's gone. Now he finally gets two coaches, not one, but two coaches who want to carry on in Scotland. Surely it was not beyond his wit and wisdom to fix something, because otherwise, I have to say, I'm searching desperately to find anything good he's done in his whole career there.
Well, this is true, and we've also got a situation from Scotland. We're the only country in the world where you can turn a story like, first of all, signing a coach of the calibre of Verne Cotter, but then also his departure. You could turn those into two very negative things. That we've waited a year for him to arrive in the first place, when Scott was doubling up as head coach very successfully, and then a year for him to go away again. So, and in between this very positive period, which is a bizarre kind of full stop put on it, I think Gregor's arrival at Glasgow was quite controversial. The current chief executive, I think, had a lot to do with that as well. And his own stock, I think, is probably pegged directly to that of Gregor's. So I think they've taken a view that they want to back the Scottish coach and hope that the rise that he's had at Glasgow continues at national level. But certainly it seems to be a very strange set of circumstances.
When you see the contrast as Wales, where Gatland's been given about 20-year contract and can stay as long as he likes, regardless of the results, and then, Verne Cotter, who's delivering big time, you wonder quite what's going on in some of the officialdom.
So we're all agreed that Scotland are moving, are making impressive strides forwards. England seems to me to be stuck, or maybe slightly in reverse, but they haven't made any gains in the Six Nations, in my opinion, so far. They've got Billy Vunipola, who looks as if he's fit to play this week. Steve, would you start him? Would you put him on the bench? Do you think he's been the missing link?
It's one of those things, like, he's such a talisman, Owen, that you try to, but I think it's one of those things, it's not really a matter of opinion. They've got all these GPS systems, and they will know exactly where he is. So it depends what their numbers show them, I think. I think if he's anything like fit, he should start. But, I mean, I think he's not going to do the whole 80, so whether he does 50 and then 30 or 30, I don't know. But I think the goal will be to have him 100% for Dublin, and possibly they might not start him this week. I don't know.
Mark, Seuss, from where you've been watching, you've seen the England team over many years. How do you rate this current crop?
The thing that struck me this season, everyone's been talking about the great strength in depth that England seem to have had or should have had and do have. I think that's been shown up slightly as a fallacy. The fact that we're talking about Vunipola as a one-man sort of rescue mission. Yes, they found a way to win, and that's a mark of a good team, because they've dogged out some victories which, normally they perhaps shouldn't have been entitled to. But I do worry that the calibre there is not as strong and is not as deep as perhaps we all thought it was, say, 12 months ago.
I think there is strength in depth, but I think that they've exposed one area where they are quite reliant. So this is the first time they've been without Billy. I wonder if you take Owen Farrell out the side.
Tired of ads interfering with your favorite sports podcasts? Good news. Ad-free listening is available on Amazon Music for all the music plus top podcasts included with your Prime membership. Stay ahead of the game by downloading the Amazon Music app for free, or go to amazon.com/sportsadfree. That's amazon.com/sportsadfree to catch up on the latest episodes without the ads.
I'm Manveen Rana from The Story, a daily news podcast from The Times. Join me and my co-host, Luke Jones, for a deep dive into the big stories and investigations. Plus, each month, William Hague hosts an agenda-setting interview with a key newsmaker or big thinker. That's The Story, the Times daily podcast that brings you one remarkable story told in depth. Listen every weekday on the Times Radio app or wherever you get your podcasts.
Tired of ads interfering with your favorite sports podcasts? Good news. Ad-free listening is available on Amazon Music for all the music plus top podcasts included with your Prime membership. Stay ahead of the game by downloading the Amazon Music app for free or go to amazon.com/sportsadfree. That's amazon.com/sportsadfree to catch up on the latest episodes without the ads.
Rising sea levels, extreme weather patterns, extinctions of species. Our planet needs protecting. I'm Adam Vaughan, the environment editor for The Times, and this is Planet Hope from The Times, in partnership with Rolex and its Perpetual Planet Initiative. In this podcast, we hear from leading experts from around the world who are committed to finding solutions. These explorers, scientists, entrepreneurs, and citizens are committed to a common goal: to protect our home, Earth. Listen now wherever you get your podcasts.
If suddenly you go, oh, we're really in trouble here, if it has the same impact.
But if a team is as good as it pretends to be, then the loss of one or two players shouldn't make that marked a difference. And I think there has been a marked decline in England's performances, as we've alluded to.
I'm going to take the English part here because you say they're in reverse. And in terms of performance, there's no way you can carry on playing better and better and better than they did in Australia. Otherwise, you'll just explode. And, you know, I think they've had injuries. I think they've given people a run out. They've now got to pick their first team, but you know there are many positions that they would worry about: fullback, tight head prop. I just don't think they have depth, but I think they do have depth. You know, when you lost both your locks and you're playing Courtney Laws and Maru Itoje in the second row, for instance, or Joe Launchbury, that doesn't strike me as being too badly off. So I think, you know, win is everything. They're still winning, and we'll forget about one or two lackadaisical performances if they go on to slam again.
Okay, across the team, Mark, do you see Scotland winning this, how close do you think they get?
Well, they were up at half-time last time around 2015, didn't score a second point and ended up losing, I think, by 12 points, 25-13. I actually have to say I see it along similar lines this weekend. I think England will still have just a bit too much, particularly up front. I know we've spoken at length already this championship about the Scottish scrum, and it is an ongoing issue. I thought it was better against Wales. Maybe some of the methodology might be questionable, but certainly Gordon Reid did well there on the loose head, better than Alan Dell had certainly in the previous two games, and he also he's got a good track record against Dan Cole from the Champions Cup with Glasgow this year, so it will be better. They were keenly desperate to get Alistair Dickinson there on one leg, potentially just on the bench, but his latest comeback ended after 49 minutes on Friday night for Edinburgh, so I think it'll be Dale on the bench again, and that's where I would worry, that if they're in it after an hour and then look to the bench, there's not a heck of a lot there.
Prediction?
I think Scotland will be competitive, but I don't think they'll be close. I don't think it's one of those ones where England will be sweating with 10 minutes to go. I think there could be 10 to 12 points in it, possibly more.
Mark?
I think England will win, but only by 7 points. And I think then the big issue they need to redress is Dylan Hartley. That should he actually be playing at the moment? Because I question what he actually is bringing now to the team.
Okay, we've got two rounds left of the Six Nations, and then at the end of that, we all know where we'll be. We'll be picking Lions teams. So we're going to go now. We're going to start with Jonesy, and he's going to go through his current Lions pick, and we are going to do our absolute ultimate not to agree.
Well, come on, you can try. You can try a bit harder than that.
You've got Simon Shaw down there, I see, Steve.
Yeah, what's wrong with that? Experience is everything.
Mike Katz, a few old favourites.
DL. All right, here we go then. This is my Lions test team on current form, okay? Fullback Rob Carney, no doubts whatsoever. Just wrote his name down.
S. Hogg.
Mark?
Hogg.
It's interesting you should say that. We've debated this week in, week out. I thought he was so good against Wales that you have to have him. I'm with Hogg as well.
Right, that's fine. That's the old Kiwis will be launching ball after ball up in the air, jumping above Hogg and getting either a penalty or a try. So that puts us 26 points down per game. Right wing Tommy Seymour. who I just thought was wonderful against Wales. He was into absolutely everything.
And do your other wing at the same time?
George North is my other wing, because I cannot believe a great player like that can continue playing so badly. And he's had his cage rattled by the coaches this week. And as long as he gets back to form, I've got George there, ideal for the conditions.
Do you think Tommy Bowe can make a stated claim for the right wing? I just think he's such a fine player when he's on form.
Mm. I've got Liam Williams on one wing. I don't think you can leave him out now. And I just actually don't think there has been a second outstanding wing yet. So I put down Anthony Watson in the hope and expectation that he really does something. I completely agree with you about George North, Steve, but how long do you wait for form? He's a fingers crossed selection. If he gets it back, then he's got to be in.
Can you see Halfpenny on the wing?
I think Lee is struggling badly for gas at the moment. I really do. I just don't see where he fits in.
Do you think he's been distracted by the Yarnoth move back to Wales and that sort of thing?
Yeah, possibly. But some of these guys, a bit like Danny Cipriani, had such a serious injury. I don't think he's 100% back from that yet. Mm. You know, simple as that.
Okay, let's go to your centres.
Centres, I've got outside centre... inside centre Robbie Henshaw. I just think he's the best. I don't think he's great at the moment, but I think he's the best in that. And I've got Elliot Daly because he's such a footballer. He's a brilliant footballer. He's got to be in there somewhere.
Mark?
Yeah, I think I wouldn't have too much to quibble with about that. I think Steve and I have already debated Stuart Hogg at length, so I won't bore him with that. Only to say that I'd quite like to see him with Tommy Seymour as well to maintain that Glasgow link. But anyway, centre's not going to quibble too much. Hugh Jones, wild card, certainly done well so far. Again, another very intuitive understanding. He's already struck up with Stuart Hogg. Excellent dummy lines that he runs as well. So I'm going to chuck him in as a wild card, but at the moment I think those two would get my nod as well.
I've got Farrell at 12, and I put Henshaw at 13 just because I want him in the team, and I don't know if that combination could work. I can't really see an outstanding 13 apart from that.
Oh, I think Daly, I think should be a 13.
I've got Owen Farrell at 10. I'm very worried about lack of durability and lack of punch at fly half. I just think Owen Farrell's got this supreme attitude as the kind of team leader out there, the sort of person people that New Zealand would love and respect. Scrum half, I've got Connor Murray, although now only by a short head from Reece Webb, because I think Reece Webb is improving after his injury all the time. So Farrell, Murray.
I thought Sexton was so good you have to have Sexton, but Murray, definitely.
You've got to have the intuitive understanding that the Irish pair are head and shoulders above, I think. I think you should have Farrell at inside centre.
Mark?
Yeah, Murray and Farrell, I think I like the look of that combination. Reece Webb is standing out more and more as well in a relatively poor Wales team as well. I'd love to be able to chuck Finn Russell in there as an option for 10, but I just don't think his game management is quite there yet for the unique environment of New Zealand.
Is this a Glasgow tour he's picking up there?
Somebody's got to stick up for them.
This was the Lions, wasn't it? Okay. Anyway, right. Front row, I'll have Jock McTavish from Glasgow.
Or Arundel.
Arundel, your mate. Front row, easy for me. Jack McGrath and Tadhg Furlong. I just love those lads. They're big, hard, bruisers, and they can both play rugby as well. Just love them.
And who have you got in between?
Hooker, I've got Jamie George.
I wanted George, but can you really pick someone for a Lions start when he's never started a test match?
It's very difficult because let's go through them.
Dylan, I do think he's the best. I think he's the best hooker, but he's the least experienced.
Dylan Hartley, the Scotland hooker, is tremendous. Dylan Hartley, I just wouldn't take. Welsh hookers, easily the best Welsh hooker is Richard Hibbard. Easily, you ask any Gloucester front rower, and they've ignored him. And just Jamie George, I think, and the Scotland lad will be fine. Rory Best had a very poor tour in Australia with the Lions.
But my front row is McAvoy and Opola, and then I've got Ken Owens at the moment, but I just can't work out the hooker, and I've got Tadhg Furlong as well.
I think perhaps you've got to look at who's going to be captain, and people have been mentioning perhaps Rory Best as captaincy material now, whether that's the case. So they may find themselves in a shoehorn into a situation they might not want. But I think Best at his best should start at hooker, and I agree it should be an All-Ireland front row. I think they're absolutely incredible trio together.
Well, my second row is Alan Wynne-Jones. I would like to see him have a better game. I'd like to see him have a really good game. Second is Courtney Laws. Sorry, I know there's loads of people, the Greys, Launchbury, Charteris, who I love, but I think Courtney Laws is becoming that nasty, edgy player we always thought he could be, and I think he's tremendous.
Mark, if you could only have one Grey brother in that second row, which would it be? Because Johnny seems to be the more highly rated player, but I think Richie's had a better Six Nations so far.
I tend to agree with that, actually. And he, as I said earlier on, I think he's had a massive kick up the proverbial since Johnny really burst through and started showing him up, because Richie was always quite a laissez-faire kind of player, and he didn't have the impact that he should have for his size and his rugby ability. But that has changed this year. There's a real edge to his game now. Another who's been forced to step up in those leadership stakes without Laidlaw. So it'd be a massively tough call between the two, but there's going to have to be some massively tough calls between about 27 second rows. So if you were asking me right now, I probably would say Richie.
Mm-hmm. And Susie would be your second row?
I think Wynne-Jones. And as everyone says, there are so many other options. Wynne-Jones, I think, is utterly brilliant, and the consistency he's shown over the years, he's right. Head and shoulders, and no doubt he probably will come into the captaincy equation as well. Alongside him, Grey, Laws. I can see what you say about Laws and Launchbury. You know, 3 or 4 years ago, were going to be the greats.
And no one mentions Marrow. Mm. Anyway, I'd have Marrow. Steve, we'll be at back row.
Marrow.
Oh. You've mentioned Marrow.
I've mentioned Marrow. Marrow in the back row. He's not quite... The thing is, he's not quite adapted to it yet, but actually Laws and Marrow are interchangeable anyway in those two positions. Marrow blindside, James Haskell openside without any shadow of doubt. And if he's at his best, Faletau, but more likely Billy Vunipola at eight. So that's Vunipola and then Itoje and Haskell on the flanks.
O'Brien, Tipperick and Vunipola for me.
Mark?
Yeah, Marrow, Billy and O'Brien for me.
Okay, not a lot.
Hang on a second, I'm just going to get my money back. Is that British Airways? Can you cancel that flight to New Zealand? I don't want to go anymore.
But no one's mentioned arguably the standout player of the championship so far, which is CJ Stander. I've got Stander at six, Billy at eight and Sam Warburton at seven. Warburton, what a competitor.
Warburton definitely be there. I think Stander, the problem is with him, he's very, very one-dimensional. I think he just gets the ball, runs in a certain line and beasts it. But he certainly wouldn't be out of place down there. Warburton, very, very close to my team indeed.
Just fine, if I can just throw in something, I remember 12 years ago, 2005, it was an absolute nightmare. Do we think we're going to be more competitive?
It wasn't a nightmare, it was much worse than that.
I mean, it was. It started badly and went downhill.
It was the all-time poorest tour.
It was grim. Do you think that we... You know, New Zealand rugby is at that level still, or is it going to be far more competitive?
No, they're not at that level because, I mean, that was when that was the glory days of Carter. I mean, Carter, people forget, that didn't play all that brilliantly, just like Johnny didn't, after that gorgeous sort of heyday that he had. No, I don't think they'll be as good as that, but I think England, the Lions will be much more organised. There'll be fewer of them. There were 78 players on that trip, and the end of the tour, you could have
that was
a little
just the
quiz
medic.
Saying, who was that? Yeah, that was just the medics, yeah. There were 29 coaches and 17 bus drivers, so that was difficult. But I think this will be far more... What Warren's got in his favour is he's done it before. He knows the shortcuts, he knows what to do, and he can shake them down quickly. It's the preparation is ludicrous. One day, all the people who've given the Lions one day to prepare for the tour would put their hands up on the way to resigning. But they've got a better chance than that, but I think they're very, very much up against it.
Okay, and on that positive note, we bring this episode to an end. Gentlemen, thank you very much. Mark, thank you very, very much for joining us. I hope you'll enjoy listening to the podcast. We'll be back in a week's time for the final week of the Six Nations.